It's not your words anymore. Now they can take it away. If somebody didn't hear it right away, those words disappear. Those words don't engrave themselves. Now, they only disappear in the physical world, but in the spiritual world, they do not disappear. They do stay. But that's another different discussion. However, when you do something that's an action, the action stands on its own. Even if somebody walks in later after you finish the action, it stands on its own. The Alter Rebbe therefore explained to us that in this chapter that this is the unity on the physical level. The Alter Rebbe has explained to us, what does unity mean? What does it mean that two different things really are not separate, but they are together? This is a very difficult concept for us to understand as people, because we don't know what unity really means, except in our experience. Two people are standing together. They're standing together, but they're not the same person. They're still two people. The example, when the Torah wants to give example of unity in the physical world, the Torah says right in the beginning of the Chumash that a father and a mother have a child. That child is the unity of the father and the mother. The Torah says they will be one flesh. V'hayu lebasar echad. They will be one. And that unity in the physical world is just about the closest that as human beings, we can understand that the father and the mother, there's some material from the father, there's some material from the mother, that means physical plus physical, comes together and forms one. That is the Torah's example of one. And that's really an amazing gift. Hashem gives the human being, and then by extension, Hashem gave the animals and all other life this ability. And it was a specific blessing that Hashem said, you shall be able to multiply, you shall be able to produce a next generation and so on. So this is an idea of one. Fine, besides this example of having a child, which makes two human beings into one, in one human being itself, the Alter Rebbe has explained to us that thought, the closest that we could understand that two things could be one, is the person's thought with the person themselves. Your thought with you, they're two separate things, the Alter Rebbe explains, because the neshama itself, the soul itself, is not its thought. The neshama itself is a soul. The soul can think. So therefore, thinking is separate from the soul. It's separate in actuality, but it's connected in such a way that other physical things cannot be connected. It's very interesting that in Hebrew, the word for love, for example, is the same gematria, the same numerical value as the word for one, echad, ahava, and echad is the same, and et cetera. So this is a fascinating concept that true unity means not two things that are one on top of the other, or one hugging the other, or one standing next to each other. No. True unity is two things that are both on the same page, intellectually and emotionally. This is what unity means. And therefore, echad and ahava, love, and one, have the same gematria. Because unity means you could be across the world and be united, or you could be standing in the same room, back to back, and in a fight, or face to face and in a fight, or fighting with somebody in a fight. So being physically together does not imply unity. Unity is unity of purpose, unity of understanding, etc. So this is what this chapter, let me call up the thing. Here we have, so this is the ideas. This is the ideas in chapter 20, and we pretty much finished the chapter. I'll just read the last little bit of it. I'll share the screen if anybody, if you want to see it. Anybody, by the way, have any comments or questions while I do that? If you want, you could just speak up, ask something, or say something. Okay, so we're talking about the unity of a person's, when a man suddenly becomes conscious of a certain love or desire in his heart, it doesn't have letters, it's a desire. All the more so, even before that, even before you actually understand what you want, even before it's actually broken up, broken down into something concrete that you can actually, if you want to, express to somebody else. You know that this thing is desirable and gratifying. You know that it's good and pleasant. For example, you want to study something, you want to eat something, you want to do something. At this point, the Alter Rebbe says, it's united with you. After the desire and craving descend into the heart, that means they have already developed into an emotion that you can actually express through wisdom, understanding, knowledge. Only after they have ascended once again from the heart back to the brain to think and meditate how to implement your desire by actually obtaining the food. At this point, the letters are born in your mind, which, in other words, in every language, whatever the person speaks, that's when the letters are born. So that is explaining to us that the neshama, the soul, has a desire. The desire of the neshama is completely connected with the neshama, with the soul. That is, in a physical, the most that we can imagine connectedness between two different things. I gave you the example of a child who is one for the father, from the father and the mother. Fine, that's a wonderful example. Not that I've actually used that example. But when you're talking about one person, where do you find connection in the physical world is thought. Higher than thought is desire. It's not even broken up into thought. You just know you want it. You don't even know how to express yourself yet. So this is going to lead up to the next chapter. And we're going to start the next chapter. And Alter Rebbe is going to say in chapter 21 that the nature of Hashem, the way God works, the way Hashem works, is not like a human being. Because a human being, when a man says something, the word that you say, even though we explain that it is very much connected with you, and let alone your thoughts, which are yet more connected with your neshama, and that's why I gave you the preface, the introduction, that what is really, well, who is the real human being is not your body, but is your soul. So when we're talking about you, we say, we mean your soul, your power plant, the spark of energy that Hashem puts into the body that makes the body a living entity. So when it says a man says something, who is the man or woman for that matter, a human being, is the neshama. When a neshama says something, yes, who is saying? The person is saying, but where is the saying coming from? It's coming from the soul. The soul is what's talking. And I said, this is a more sophisticated way of understanding. As a person understands that the body itself, clearly when you think about it, cannot be really running itself, because at a certain point, the person dies. The body stays whole. If the body stays whole and yet it's dead, so what was... Who is the real body? Who is the real person? Where did that person go? And one minute you're there, next minute you're not there, just a shell. And the answer, of course, is the neshama. The soul is the real person. So when the neshama says something, the soul has this ability, and Hashem gave this to us as a gift, to express itself through thought, speech, and action of the body. The man says something, the person says something, the breath of the spoken word is independent from its source. What is its source? The 10 intellectual and emotional faculties of the soul. This is a human being. When a human being says something, that thought and that speech that is expressing the thought is has an identity. Hashem's speech is not separated from his divine self. The speech of God is not, heaven forbid, separated from his divine self. Nothing is outside of him. So now we're going to say that imagine the unity of thought, of speech, and then of thought between a human being. Ramp it up many, many notches to a level that we can't even imagine. And Hashem's thought and Hashem's speech is not separated, is one, is truly one. Truly one means it doesn't have an independent identity. It is completely connected. Now, these are words. We can only, as humans, we can only truly, truly understand things that are in our experience and our experiential universe, the level, the universe of what we experience. We are limited. We can imagine outside of ourselves. Even our imagination is based on what we have experience with. So, for example, if you told a person who never saw colors in their life, they're blind, they never saw colors, they never saw anything, let alone colors, you try to explain colors to them, it's next to impossible. You know, how are you going to explain colors to a person who never saw anything? So that we don't understand exactly, but this is a little way that we can at least begin to imagine that we understand. And that is that the speech of Hashem, which is the world is called Hashem's speech, because the Torah uses that as an analogy. In the beginning of the Torah, when the Torah says Hashem created the world, it says Hashem said there should be light. Hashem said there should be this. Hashem said there should be that. So this is an analogy that just like when we say something, it creates a certain reality that's connected but still disconnected. So too, when Hashem created the world, that's connected but disconnected. In what way is it connected? It's truly connected. In what way is it disconnected? Only from our perspective is it disconnected. This is a very, very, it's a difficult, but yet very critical, very, very critical concept to understand, that the world is not disconnected from Hashem, except from our perspective. Except from our perspective. We think the world is disconnected. So it's as if you have a magician on the stage who's doing a magic trick, and the audience thinks that they saw a certain thing. The magician knows it never happened. Hashem is the best magician, except that from Hashem's perspective, it really happens for us. So for us, it really happens. No magician can do that. Either it happened or it didn't happen. From Hashem can make in reality, it's connected. But from our perspective, the reality is it's disconnected. And therefore, once we understand that the reality of the world is Hashem's reality and not our reality, all of a sudden we look at the world in a different way. And this is a fascinating discussion. And the Chassidus asks, is there a world? If the reality is that the world is connected to Hashem and therefore doesn't really exist, is there really a world? And the answer is yes, there is really a world, but only from our perspective. Hashem makes it such, and then the proof is that it says in the Torah that Hashem created the world. The Torah is ultimate truth. And if the Torah would not have told us that Hashem created a world, then we would think that we're living in a dream. You know, we're living in a so-called a matrix-like dream. We're living in a state of mind that we're hallucinating that there's a world, and we ourselves are our own hallucinations. We don't exist either. That's not what it says in the Torah. The Torah, it says, we do exist. Hashem created the world that it should exist. When we do a mitzvah, it makes a difference. If we do the opposite of a mitzvah, we do a sin, it makes a difference. So this is only, however, still from our perspective. And that's a very important thing to understand. This was a discussion from an early Kabbalist. The early Kabbalists discussed whether when Hashem contracted his energy, the Tzimtzum, and created a world, did it really contract, or is it only looking and appearing from the perspective of the world as if it contracted? And the Arizal and the Alter Rebbe and all of the Chassidim, of course, take the position, not of course, but take the position that it Tzimtzum, the contraction, is not literal. It didn't really contract. Hashem can do anything, and therefore he made it as if it contracted, and from our perspective, that's our reality. And at the end of the day, we are put into this reality that's not real. So the struggle of the human being, therefore, is, according to the sophisticated way, so to speak, of looking at the whole world, what's our struggle? Our struggle is to be able to elevate ourselves above what's apparent and to actually and to make ourselves as appreciative, as real, as with a realization that's only possible to accomplish through study and through thinking. It's a gift, again, that Hashem gives us through Torah. Through Torah and through the study of Torah, Hashem gives us this gift that we are able to rise above our own physical limitations. Limitation of a physical being is not to be able to see anything beyond yourself and beyond your experience. Through Torah, we're able to put on this, today we have all these wonderful analogies. You're able to put on this headset that will show you a world, a three-dimensional world, so to speak. And you're looking through I'm blanking on the word right now, where you put on these 3D goggles and all of a sudden you think you're in a world. You think you're in a play. It's not, it's your imagination. You're looking at stuff that's fooling your eyes and your brain. You think you're going here, you think you're going there. Meanwhile, you're sitting in the
room. Virtual reality.
Virtual, exactly. Virtual reality, thank you. So Torah gives us the ability to see the virtual reality that is the real reality. You understand? This amazing gift Hashem gave us, that through Torah, we should be able to rise above the physical world that we're actually living in, and to be able to see not the virtual, but the real reality that appears to us to be virtual because of our limitations as physical beings. So this is really amazing, amazing stuff. Alter Rebbe says, if a Jew realizes and reaches this level of realization, that what is the virtual reality, meaning that the fact that Hashem is really the spiritual energy of God, is what's only existing in the world itself, doesn't have any independent existence. If you can really incorporate that into your mind and into your way of looking every moment of the day, because again, this is a big problem. We can incorporate this for one split second. We can really be on that level. But a minute later, we look at the world, we look at the ice cream cone, as my teachers used to say, you look at the piece of bubble gum, you look at whatever the physical thing that you want at the moment. That's the example, you understand, they used to give in yeshiva. But we all know that there's many, many things in this world that are pulling us in many different directions. And of course, it brings us back down to earth, so to speak, and it doesn't let us truly appreciate. But if you can keep yourself on that level where you realize and recognize that Hashem's presence is the only thing that's real, then why, the Alter Rebbe says, would a person ever make this mistake of an